The world's best don't get results alone, and now neither do you, no matter when, where, or what you're working on. Introducing Pit Stop's AI Avatar Marketplace. Think of it like Spotify, but for personal and professional growth. Imagine instant access to digital versions of the world's top coaches, each one trained on their unique methods, experience, and coaching style. This isn't just another chatbot. Every Pit Stop AI avatar is powered by real coach insights, their notes, their podcasts, and what they've learned from real sessions. It's a truly personalized coaching companion, so much smarter and more relevant than generic tools like ChatGPT. Whether you want to level up in business, build new habits, manage stress, or boost your confidence, you're not just getting advice, you're getting it directly from the playbook of proven high achievers, all at a fraction of the cost of traditional coaching and available 24/7 whenever you need that extra edge. Ready to find the coach that you need? Use Pit Stop as your launchpad for growth. Head to the link in the show notes and download the app now.
Welcome to Drive to Thrive, a Pit Stop podcast. My name is Sandy and I am your host. And this week I'm joined by George Bettany. George is the founder of Mara Running. And he came on to talk us through how presence unlocks performance and why it is so important to be present. We talked about his journey of getting into running and how over the course of a couple of years, he managed to stop the overthinking, the busy brain, the high energy that he struggled with all his life, and how running really was a catalyst for him being able to quiet down all that noise and channel his energy into something that was meaningful to him. And for him, that was what is now Mara Running. So helping people get out running, get over that kind of first hurdle of just leaving the front door, helping people find where they play and stay in there and enjoy that, whether that is running or anything else. We talked about, you know, for me, it's surfing. We talked about why coaching is so important in today's world. And of course, therapy has a place, and therapy is very much looking backwards and identifying those things. But if you're looking to move forwards with your life and improve, coaching really is the way forwards. The effects of running on your mental health as well as your physical health, why that is so important. And then, of course, George's entrepreneurship journey and how he managed to find something meaningful to him and channel all of his energy into that. A really, really valuable conversation, great insights. George, super candid. He said he's not done many podcasts before, but this was a really great conversation. I'm really excited to talk with George further. Please do enjoy our conversation with George Bettany. Presence unlocks performance. What does that mean to you?
Well, I guess it wouldn't have meant a lot to me a little while ago. It's something that is kind of new, I guess. It's something I've learned over the last few years. I think presence for me is just means being fully engaged, fully in it, fully at the task in hand. You're fully engaged, fully in it, and fully in flow, I guess. And that's where you perform at your best. And for me, I grew up playing a lot of football, and I spent a lot of matches in my own head, kind of judging myself, comparing myself to others, you know, worrying about my last pass that wasn't very good, and then worrying about making that same mistake again, or thinking, oh my God, you know, what's my next pass going to be? So constantly in my head, past or future, or comparing myself to others. And so, like, I didn't perform very well. And I also can't remember many matches. Like I've said this on a few podcasts, like, it's all a bit of a blur. And there's the one or two games that I really remember where I was really just not in my head, like on the pitch, like really on the pitch, in flow. And not only do I remember those matches, but I played my best in those games. So for me, that's presence unlocks, like not only performing at your best, but feeling at your best as well.
Yeah, flow is such an interesting word when it comes to this stuff, isn't it? Like getting into that sort of flow state. And that can sound like a bit of a just sort of jargon piece in this wellness space, that sort of flow state. What are there any kind of active steps you took? So your football career is kind of the perfect, paradigm to put this in, really, because it's it's so obvious how you measure performance when you're on the pitch, isn't it? You know, I've been watching the Welcome to Wrexham documentary on Disney over the last few weeks. I don't know if you're, you know, watching it or anything, but season 4 is coming out week by week at the moment. And I'm not a football guy at all, but I absolutely love it. And they talk a lot about this as well. And, you know, that performance and you know, taking a bad game and kind of putting it aside. But what are some active kind of steps you do to try and get into that flow state when you're in your football career, but also with what you're doing now?
It's so, you know, you said about flow being this kind of like fluffy word, like it can be used in that way. It's honestly mindfulness, presence, flow. Like these were all terms that I just thought were nonsense. Only until the last couple of years, I just thought that like it's just a load of kind of spiritual stuff that isn't real. I genuinely didn't think things like this were real. But when I think back to those matches, the one that I played in that was like one of my best ever games, my granddad was there. And I remember thinking, it could honestly make me emotional or really take myself back. I remember thinking, he might not ever watch me play again. And it was so powerful and strong. I've got goosebumps now. It took me out of my head because I thought, this is just my last match. I'm not going to play again for him. And so, oh God, man, it actually makes me emotional. But yeah, that kind of took me away and just fully in. So that was, without knowing it, that was a kind of a practice and a tool of like, this is the only match. This is the only match. And when you listen to like Michael Jordan in The Last Dance, I don't know if you've seen that on Netflix, they say that presence is his superpower. And apparently every training session in the documentary, it's all out there. He plays like it's his only training session, like it's his last session. And that it's all he's fixated on is just playing the best that he can in that game, in that training session. And he takes each training session like that. And then every game like that, every match like that, every final like that, every play, and almost like every play and every shot like that. And that does take practice of basically letting go of the noise, letting go of the thought. Like I chose that day to focus my mind on this is my last match versus all the other stuff that goes on. And for me, that has been a practice the last couple of years of understanding that's how I sort of play my best or perform my best or feel my best. And then it's a practice of dialing into that. So I guess there's other techniques I can talk about that I've now used over the last couple of years, but that's a really good one.
Yeah, I love that. And the Michael Jordan comparison is kind of perfect, isn't it? And that you hear it all the time as well, you know, play this game as if it's your last. But like cliches are cliches for a reason, right? You know, it kind of, there is some kind of semblance to that of like being, we call it being where your feet are. I've listened to another podcast as well, where talking about ways to be present. And I'd love to know whether you do this as well. But one example was when you're sitting driving your car and you feel your mind wandering. We've all had that where you're like 20 minutes go by when you're driving and you're like, oh shit, I've literally not been present at all while I'm doing this. Mm. But, you know, kind of something as simple as like actually feel the perforations on the steering wheel, you know, while you're there, like almost have a physical like way to bring yourself back into your body, because it's so easy to let your mind run away. And I can only imagine, you know, being on a football pitch and, you know, dealing with that, and there's so much stimulation going on around you, it can be easy to let your mind go elsewhere as almost like a coping mechanism.
It's exactly that. And it's also, I didn't know there was a different way. So no one taught me. I played at a high standard when I was younger. We spent all these hours on the pitch training. So my technique was good. I played well in training. So training matches, I was fully there, like training sessions. And I remember it came to game match day and my head, my mind would take me out of that. And no one in those years I was there took us aside and said, look, you can actually change that. If you practice this or do this, you can feel very different on the pitch. So I do think for me, it was habit. It was habit of I've got into that mindset of like taking my mind away, probably to protect myself, like you've just said. And the last couple of years I've practiced and instilled it. And it's still a constant dance. Like even this morning, I felt myself kind of, you know, dancing away from the thing I was doing. And it's a constant practice of like awareness, bring myself back, like you said, driving the steering wheel and keep focused on the task at hand. And you know, the best athletes, the best CEOs, it is the key to performance, because performance is about it's about consistency, you know, continual practice at the thing that you want to get good at, consistency. And the things that gets in the way of consistency is discipline. And the things that gets in the way of discipline is you and your mind. Like,
I like that.
So yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I like that. That's kind of taking it and going backwards the other way.
Yeah,
because a lot of the time you start at the beginning and there you kind of, you know, spoke at the end. Is that something that you've done? Because I know you've also, you know, we talked briefly about your football career, but you then kind of have gone into this sort of entrepreneurship journey. Were those kind of lessons, you know, in terms of discipline and things like that, is that something that you carried across into that journey as well?
I do think it only really has really sort of instilled and for sort of feels like it's ingrained in me now. It has been more through running. And I guess, yeah, I've had this entrepreneurial journey and I still very much am. But the last couple of years, I always used to hate running. And again, it was because I was in my head all the time. So on every run, I'd just be like, I'm not going quick enough. I'm not fast enough. I'm not fit enough. Everyone's faster than me. Just this constant noise and monologue that was just draining me. So every run I'd go out too quickly. I'd carry all this weight. So I used to say, I hate running. It's not for me. Even though I was good at it, because I'd spent a lot of time running on the football pitch, I didn't enjoy going for a run. And, you know, the last few years, my previous company worked in mental health and well-being. So I did a lot of work on myself. So I learned a lot about these things that I used to think weren't real, you know, like mindfulness, presence, meditation, coaching, therapy, breath work. I did loads of sort of work on myself, I guess. And when I started running again a couple of years ago, I guess it was like a combination of like my athletic performance from when I was a kid, sort of well-being and presence and mindfulness that I've kind of learned over the last 6 or 7 years, almost brought together in running for the first time. So I combined it together. And yeah, I started to practice running mindfully. And it was really hard at first. But the more I did it, the more I was able to notice these thoughts, the negative thoughts especially. And then it's just a practice of letting them go. So with every run, I was just noticing my thoughts, practicing, like dropping them. And it took me a long time. It took me a good, I'd honestly say 2 years of, because I kind of got into it during lockdown, like a lot of people. And probably took me a year or two of like every run, just like practicing that before I really could say I felt free. And it's not like a final state, you know, it's not like I got there and was like enlightened and was like, oh my God, I'm free now. I can, you know, don't need to do this anymore. It was more a case of like, okay, now I've really felt how this feels to feel free on a run. And now if I can keep practicing this, then it's been my unlock, you know, it's helped me run further, run faster than I've ever genuinely felt like I thought I had in me. And I feel so free now on a run. And that's kind of translated back to your question to like my entrepreneurship, to how I feel public speaking, to how I feel creating things online, social media, and putting them out in the world and being less attached to the outcome. It's translated my relationships. I'm a new dad, how I'm like parenting. It's translated to everything. And I feel like running in this way has been my form of practice, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. It's interesting what you said there about the kind of the thoughts and you know, letting them come in and go out and how that kind of works for you. We had a guy on the podcast a few months ago called Keith Crossley, who's based in the States, and he compared it. He gave the analogy of like it's like an air traffic controller, and you're controlling the planes that come in and go out again, and that's like what your brain is. And we get it's however many tens of thousands of thoughts that we have every single day, and we often forget that we are actually in charge of those thoughts, and we're so quickly to just go into. I'm going to confuse the metaphor with this, but so quickly to go into autopilot and just let it happen. And actually we don't need to do that. We can recognize this thought coming in and be like, that's negative. I'm not having that. You're not landing here. And you're like, sorry, nice. Mate, you got to go again. Whereas, and then another thought pattern comes in, you go, right, no, you can land here and I can spend some time on that.
And that's great. That's so good,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's so good. And you know, these practices have been around for hundreds, thousands of years, like meditation and breath work. And I've struggled with them because I'm so high energy and I'm used to movement. And so I've never found a way to kind of like just slow down and notice these thoughts. And it's been a long journey for me to get. And I feel like running and practicing essentially like awareness and mindfulness and presence whilst moving has been my way in, because you know, the minute I started to notice how many negative thoughts I carried on a run, I was like, oh my God, like this is a lot of negative thoughts that I'm choosing to hold on to. And there's two brilliant books that I always refer to is The Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle, which is like, you know, the Bible of presence and enlightenment, essentially. But, you know, in this book, back to what you're saying there, he said suffering is a choice. And I remember reading that, and I think we connected on this. I was like, that's not true. I was like, no, that's not true. Like, for example, running is hard. I was like, so I'm suffering. That's not my fault. Running's hard. And his point in the book is like, yes, running is uncomfortable for sure. If you're running up a hill, if you're running in the rain, if you haven't ran before, it's hard, no doubt. But the second layer of suffering is when you, so a hill, this is hard. And then you add the thought, oh God, I wish I wasn't going up this hill. Oh God, I wish it was flat. Oh God, I wish it was going downhill. Oh God, I wish I'd done more hill training so I was more ready for this. Oh God, I wish I was fitter than. They're all things I'm adding on to the hill. Do you get what I mean? So like, I'm adding these extra challenge, you know, this extra weight to the hill's hard enough, running's hard enough, and I'm adding more onto it. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm adding so much to this. So then it was like a practice of like understanding that the suffering is my choice. The discomfort I can't do anything about, but the suffering's my choice. So the more awareness I can have of like my thoughts on a run, and then the more I'm able to just let them go, the more I'm able to just focus on the hill, focus on just the run itself. And the practices, I guess, for me, another great book as I read at the same time when I was getting into this was Mindful Ultra Running. And it just two simple practices that the Para now also uses, focusing on my breath and focusing on my stride. So I'd notice my thought, oh God, this is hard. Oh, I don't know if I can do this. And then just focus on counting my breaths or counting my steps or saying out loud or in my head, like inhale and exhale, because basically the premise is your stride and your breath is happening in the moment. It's so live, it's so present that by bringing my attention to that, I'm bringing myself back to now. And I needed that at first because the strength of my negative thoughts was so powerful that just by me saying let go wasn't enough. I couldn't just say, George, let go of those thoughts. They were too strong. They were too ingrained in like my habit. So I had to like drag myself back to like just count your steps, George. Just count your steps, like 1, 2, 3. I'd get to like 3 or 4 and I'd be back up here like, this hill's hard. But no, George, come back. And honestly, it was like a year of that, of like out in. And yeah, I'm kind of like so passionate about it now because it's unlocked me to levels I did not understand I had in me. And I've tried everything else. I can't explain how many other things. I've tried drinking. I've tried drugs. I've tried, you know, ice baths. I've tried flotation tanks. I've tried meditation. Tried therapy. I've tried traveling the world. I've tried different businesses. I kind of feel like I've tried everything. And this is it. It's like a constant practice, a constant work. There's nothing else. And if you can dial into this, it unlocks everything, basically. So, yeah, I'm just kind of like wired by it now.
Is that what led you to kind of do the stuff you're doing now with Mara then? You know, talking about your entrepreneurship journey, as you said, you've done kind of things in various businesses and all this, and you've already said you move pretty fast, you know, you're quite high energy. How have you gone about kind of channeling that energy? Because I'm sure there's a lot of other people out there who are listening to this that are, you know, they are high, you know, you look at like the amount of people being diagnosed with ADHD and all this stuff, you know, there's a lot of people with a lot of energy out there. I think we're very quickly told how lazy we all are. And I think a lot of the time that's bullshit, because actually we've all got a lot of energy and we all want to channel it and put it somewhere. Where did you go to start, and where can you recommend for others to start to try and figure out a way of channeling that energy when it comes to, I suppose, that, you know, through the entrepreneurship lens?
We'll get back to the episode in 1 minute, but first I want to tell you about our app. Imagine having the same kind of support and coaching that top athletes and successful people rely on to reach their goals. That's what Pit Stop offers, a platform designed to help you build better habits, strengthen relationships, improve in your career and finances, as well as overcoming challenges like anxiety, addiction, or burnout. With Pit Stop, you're not just getting a coach, you're joining a community. You'll have access to one-on-one expert guidance, a cutting-edge habit tracker, smart journaling tools, and a constantly updated library of quick actionable insights. It's everything you need to grow right at your fingertips. As a listener of this podcast, you can kickstart your journey with an exclusive 20% discount on your first 3 months of one-to-one coaching. Just use the code PODCAST when you sign up. Why wait for things to change? Take action and start your next chapter today.
Yeah, well, I think I used to think that this sort of stuff was a waste of time, basically. So, you know, mindfulness, presence, it's meditation, breath work. The thought of like sitting still and in silence for like 5 minutes or focusing on my breath, or I was just like, how will that benefit me? How will slowing down and taking 10 minutes help me achieve X? I've got so much to do. I've got so many things I want to achieve, you know, and that feels like it's taking me away from where I want to be. I just couldn't connect the two. I couldn't connect how slowing down equals going faster. And it's really interesting, actually, in running. The general rule is 80% of your running should be done at a 2 out of 10, 20% pace. So if one, take a scale of 1 to 10. 10 is a flat out sprint and 1 is a walk, basically. Just go one from a walk, like a 2, maybe a 3. And you have to do most of your miles at that pace to build your aerobic base. And then that allows you to go further and run faster, which blew my mind when I read this. I was like, why did no one teach me that you have to run slower to run faster? Like, I need a good aerobic base. So that blew my mind in running, because then I did that and I got faster. So I think maybe that gave me confidence in slowing down in general. And then two, I understood that, like, that I started to understand on when I was running and practicing this, I guess, presence and mindfulness, was that it was a practice of focus, not a practice of like escape, not a practice of like slow down, relax, chill out, like take, you know, stop and do nothing. I used to think that that would lead to doing nothing. And I was afraid that if I slowed down, I would achieve nothing. And actually running more slowly and focusing my mind allowed me to run my first marathon, which I used to think was like unachievable. And then I did it and I was like, I did that by doing this. So it then gave me confidence in the result, in the fact that if you do this, you'll achieve things. So yeah, back to your question of where can people start? I think if 5 minutes of meditation feels like, well, that feels like a big step for me, start somewhere where you already play. So if you walking or running, or I know surfing, you surfing or whatever excites you or interests you already, driving, I would say just bring a tiny amount of mindfulness or presence into that. So a walk, can you walk in silence for a few minutes? If you usually are on your phone or you've got your headphones in listening to music, can you take them out for a few minutes and then put them back in? Can you focus on your breath for a few minutes on a walk and then bring yourself back? You know, just count your strides on a walk and then come back. So however, if you're driving, like you say, can you bring your attention to the steering wheel just for like 30 seconds and then back? Start wherever you already play and just bring a little bit of it into it. And then I would say just each time, see how that feels, start there. Start where feels easiest and then, yeah, see how that feels. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's we're so quick, you know, before you hit record, we were talking about this, how there is a lot of this kind of wellness space out there and there are a lot of people in it and things. And for someone looking to get into it, like yourself, you know, initially thinking, well, this isn't a thing, this isn't important. And actually realizing, oh, maybe I should listen to some of the guys on Instagram that I keep being shown videos of, or, you know, I will try and have a go at this. And then they go all in for a week and go, oh, this, you know, they go do the cold plunge and the gym and the workout and the, I don't know, yeah, all the supplements and everything. And they do that for a week because they've gone from 0 to 100 and completely changed their whole routine and the way of living. Mm. And like you, I really like what you said, start, well, I can't remember the way you said it, but start where you play, I think is such a valuable way. Like I ain't getting up and going out for a run today, you know, but I am going for, I will go for a walk, you know, and I will do that. And like you said, I had no idea about, I can just go a bit slower. So, you know, there may come a day where I'm like, actually, maybe I'll just pick it up the pace a little bit. Or, you know, I think we're so quick to think that we have to do all or nothing when it comes to improving ourselves and getting better. And actually, that's not the case at all. No. And I like to think that people are kind of wake up. Everybody I have on the podcast at the moment is talking about this stuff of like, start. Really? Yeah, like just like take these couple of little steps. You know, you don't, no wonder, you know, whether, you know, a weight loss is like the easiest kind of way to kind of describe it, you know, and people suddenly change everything about it. And then 2 weeks later, they're back drinking alcohol. They're back doing all the bad things because they've done the crash diet. Whereas actually, you know, the small sustainable changes are where this kind of value is really found.
For sure. Yeah. I was going to add to that. I think there's going to be, because since lockdown and COVID, there's been a huge well-being and health shift. And I feel like Mara actually started for me running in this way. And then it started as a run club and community. And almost before the run club boom happened, I found myself running with others and calling it a run club. And then that was happening all over the world. And it's incredible to see so many people now running, maybe versus going to the pub. And like, rather than having a drink, they're going for a run. So there's definitely been this shift and people are working out and exercising more. However, I still see people, and I still, I guess, think the next wave of that is going to be people are going to run these marathons, do their high rocks, and then still feel the same, that they almost feel like maybe the medal or the completing the marathon or doing that high rocks time, chasing that faster time is going to lead to like, I'm going to feel, you know, at peace. And then you get the medal, you get the sub 3 hour marathon, you get the high rocks and you still feel the same. And that's why I think all the guests maybe you're bringing on are talking about this thing. Cause I think what I'm talking about here is the next phase. I think it's the next wave because I think everyone's getting into this, which is brilliant. But I think it's not like I've ran fast marathons and slow marathons and they're kind of the same because it's just a session at a time, a run at a time. And that's taken work to get there. I used to be so attached to the outcome that I would chase it and chase it and chase it. And yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that, but I think, I think it's really interesting to hear that the other people that you're bringing on are talking about this thing because I do think it's the next wave.
No, I like that as well. I think, again, we are also outcome driven, especially men. We're very much like, where are the results? How well have we done? What was your time? What was your time? And then there's the competitive element, of course. Mm. And actually, you know, it's the classic thing. Like we've all heard it, like, you know, the guy who wins the lottery or the person who sells their business or, you know, they get there, they get to the destination and they sit there and they're like, right, well, I thought this was going to make me happy. I thought I'd done it. You know, I shared a story. I can't remember who it was that said this, but they, you know, they were talking about how they'd finally taken this holiday and they went there and they arrived on the beach and the guy sat down and he's got his cocktail and he looked around and the first thing he thought was, oh, it's really good. We should definitely come back here next year.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and he couldn't, he'd done the thing and finally he'd got to the top of the mountain and got there and immediately he couldn't sit and enjoy it. Cause he was like, right, well, we'll do this again. You know, we'll do this next year. And I think it's so important what you said to make sure that you're like enjoying, it's so corny again, but like enjoying the process. You know, it's the journey, not the destination. It comes back to that because like you said, whether you cross the line in 3 hours or in 5.5 hours, you still done the marathon and you're still going to be pleased with it. And if you are fully results orientated, you're A, never going to give yourself any credit for what you've done. And B, it's just not a very good way to navigate your way through life, to be honest.
And I'm smiling and nodding because it was me, like,
really.
And that is still kind of in me somewhere, and I'm having to work against that. That was me. I would strive and chase and work towards things, and I just thought that was how it was done. And then, yeah, it's kind of a painful way to learn, I guess. Is the actual more painful way to learn is achieving some of those things, and then sort of still feeling
realizing exactly
the same as I did the morning of achieving that. I'm like, oh God, it's like quite a, and that's what I've seeing around me is people oh my God, this running feels so much better than drinking, so I need to run. But they're still striving to that marathon, which is brilliant. Like, having that purpose is great, but there's a great saying of like, when you find peace in the miles, in every mile, that's when you kind of, you know, it all clicks. And you know, the best, I think the thing is for me is listening now to the best athletes, and it's just in all of the best athletes, all the best entrepreneurs are at peace with that shot or that mile or that meeting or that email. They're just so dialed into the thing that they're doing. Like Rory McIlroy, great golfer, Federer, Djokovic, you know, if they are too attached to the trophy or the result of the match, that thought is actually taking them away from the shot that they're making. So it's actually the thing that they want most, by attaching to that or thinking about that or striving towards it, that thought is taking them away from it. So their ability to, like, I know I want to win this, the Masters, but I've got to emotionally let go of that now and just focus on this shot. And if that shot is a good shot or a bad shot, the key is to, like, not judging it. It's gone now. I'm now focused on this shot. And it's just a constant practice of, like, don't judge the last shot. Don't think about the next shot. Just focus on this shot. And not only is that the key to them performing at their best and achieving that, it's just more enjoyable. Like, Johnny Wilkerson was talking about, you know, one of the best rugby players of all time. If you look at the best, Zinedine Zidane, the best footballer of all time, he's just free on the pitch. It's like poetry. It's like emotion. He's flowing. And that's because he's like he's just so in it. And basically what I feel is some people have that, their environment, their parents, their upbringing, maybe a shape Michael Jordan to be just in, he's just there. Whereas I think my upbringing took me away from there. So I've had to work really hard to get my mind to this place. And I think for a lot of us, we have to practice to get to where the likes of Michael Jordan and Djokovic are. And that's fine. That's okay. Like, I'm looking at the best athletes in the world, like one or two, like there's a handful of them. If we can just take what they do, and if I can do 10% of what Federer does, I'm happy with that, because that's only going to take me further and help me enjoy it. And yeah, I think if we can practice this, I think the beautiful thing about it is, you know, some of the marathons I've done, I still have enjoyed those days and you know, achieve things that I didn't think I was capable of. But what's brilliant is I used to achieve those things and then fall off. Whereas now I'll kind of do the run, I'll like enjoy it, and then it's just kind of another run in a way. Like, I can't wait to get back out there, because I'm like, I found peace out there now. Like, I just want to keep doing it. So yeah, I guess that's the opposite of suffering. You know, if you feel like in flow, enjoying it, kind of you're at the opposite of suffering, I guess, is peace. And if you feel at peace in every mile or every shot or every email or every meeting, you'll just keep doing it. And yeah.
Yeah. It comes back to presence unlocking performance, doesn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. As you can tell, what's so funny is I haven't done too many of these. I've kind of been working with people, whether like leading groups or working one-to-one. I haven't done many podcasts. So I think the minute somebody gives me a mic, I need to practice, like, because I get so excited and passionate about it, and maybe helping one person listening to this just like flick the switch that, it never in my life have I felt like that about something like this strongly. And I think it's because I want to help people so much, like, and I know it will work. So yeah, yeah.
why is, you've kind of led me perfectly into the next point. Like, why is coaching so it's so important in today's world? You know, there's a huge discourse at the moment around therapy, especially for men. You know, there's a lot of statistics coming out now that actually it's maybe not as effective as it should be for men, and men are turning to more. I hate to use the word practical, because I'm a product of therapy. It has hugely helped me throughout my life, so I don't want it to come across like I'm saying it doesn't work, because that's not the case at all. But I'm just following the statistics and things like that, and a lot more men are turning to breath work or coaching for a specific aspect of their life or something like that. I know coaching is now, you know, a huge part of your life. You said you're helping people out and things. Why do you think coaching is suddenly becoming a kind of very popular method of improving themselves, people improving themselves.
Yeah. I'm the same with therapy. Therapy, you know, letting go of negative thoughts. So to be in the present, to be in the now, you have to let go of thoughts from the past and thoughts of the future. So like I was just using Rory, the golfer, let go of the championship. That's in the future. Just focus on this shot now. If you have a traumatic moments in your past, grief, loss, things that have happened that are difficult to let go of. They're difficult to let go of because they're big moments in your past. I think that negativity is difficult to let go of and difficult to move into to sort of here. So for me, therapy, what happened was I was almost trying to get into here, but there was big moments from my past that kept coming back in. And what therapy helped me do was it was like a container to like face some of those things. I didn't even know I needed to face them. I just kind of went into therapy and they kind of came out. Mm. I kind of faced them, was able to acknowledge them, able to find acceptance of them, some of the really difficult stuff from growing up. And by accepting it, I then was able to let it go because I'd kind of gone into it. But I kind of needed that container to do it. I didn't realize I did. And I think for a lot of, like you said, men, a lot of my mates, when I speak to them, I notice some of the same things coming up. And actually having a dedicated container to just go, this is from my past, this happened to me, I wanted to get it out and let it. The only way to let something go is acceptance. The only way to find peace with it is acceptance. And some things are too big to just, you know, they need the space. So anyway, long story short, therapy was really, really good for me on that front. And once I'd done that, I then see coaching, these practices and these tools. It's like going to the gym. It's like you need to keep working. You can't just stop. Like therapy's for the past, so get those things out and let them go and then keep working. And I see, for me, I use the word coaching with Mara, but really I see coaching as like accountability. Mm-hmm. It's like we've got these spaces with Mara where they're going to be here, and we're going to keep showing up, you know, whether it's a group run, whether it's a group meditation, a group breath work, a one-to-one, these spaces are going to keep showing up. And if you commit to them, that's a commitment to yourself to keep showing up and keep practicing and keep doing this work. And I've done all this different work on myself. And it's the same as running. You can train for a marathon, run a marathon. If I stop running, I can't run a marathon again in like a 2 months' time. I won't be able to. I have to keep training. I have to keep running. And it's the same with performance and with how you feel. Presence isn't something that you just get and then you're always in the present. You've constantly got this external noise, like trying to take you away. So you have to keep working at your internal, keep building your internal, keep building that ability to like withhold the past and the present. And not only past and present, even in your current world, my phone takes me away from the present all the time if I go into it. So I have to keep working on my ability to let go of the noise and just bring myself into the thing I'm doing. And back to your question, coaching is one form of that for me. And yeah, it's an ongoing practice. It's a dedicated space. It's a committed space. It keeps you accountable. And a lot of the people Mara works with, I just think it's the accountability. I think that's the biggest thing is like, if you show up, I'll be there as well.
Yeah, I think accountability is such a big part of it, especially if you're doing something physical and something demanding.
Yeah,
I think, you know, so many of us are seeking a purpose and to try and improve and things like that. But like, it's difficult to do it by yourself. 100%. It's so hard, especially when I had a guy called Adam on last week. Well, by the time this comes out, yeah, it'll be last week. And he was talking about, he coaches a lot of very successful, you know, entrepreneurs, businessmen, people like that. And the biggest thing he talks about is we're all very quick to go on about balance and how we all need balance in our lives. And he was like, balance implies, this was really wise, it's something I've been thinking about ever since I recorded it. He was like, balance implies that life is static. Balance implies that things aren't moving. You told me before we hit record, you've got a 6-month-old child. How much balance have you got in your life right now, mate? You know, like things, is your life in a static position at the moment? Like, absolutely not. I don't have a 6-month old and my life isn't static. I'm going on holiday tomorrow. Like, like everybody's lives are constantly moving. So to try and think about this concept of balance is almost, it's almost pointless because it doesn't exist. So if you can, instead of thinking like that, if you can have the tools to think, right, what do I actually like doing? What is that? Okay, here are the things I like doing. Here are my kind of non-negotiables. Here are my boundaries that I want to do. But then how do I stay accountable for that? How do I make sure that I'm not just, and like relying on yourself is wonderful, but I think you've also got to realize, like, you know, nobody's infallible. Like, you know, we are tempted to go and do this and go and do that. You know, we can't all be perfect, but actually, if we are accountable, we do have someone in our corner being like, hey, why don't you don't do that, do this, or come and meet us at 5 o'clock and let's go running and we'll all do it together, or do this. I think the value of that cannot be overstated in today's world where we're all just getting busier and busier, and side hustles and families and, you know, relationships and all this. It is so difficult. And I think it's something I've been really thinking about, and I've been looking forward to sharing it on a podcast. And it's nice that it's come up naturally here, but it is that idea of, we are so quick to jump on the words balance and routine. And I think so often those don't exist. So if we can have something to help keep us accountable and just bring us back a little bit. And like we said earlier, it's not about doing it all at once and, you know, getting everything done straight away, you know, taking those small little steps, you know, finding where you play and working on that. And if you can have someone there that's accountable, you don't necessarily need to worry about balance and routine, because you're like, you're already in that flow state you've said, where you're like, well, I'm flexible enough that, you know, if I do need to look after my kid or if I do need to do this, then I know I'll be fine because I've got, you know, the rest of things sorted out. I feel like I waffled a bit there, but does that make sense?
No. Honestly, it's more enjoyable, I think, when you not only are you, like, for example, surfing. You that solo time that you get when you're on the surf, when you're in the waves, is beautiful. But occasionally, going out together and sharing a wave, there's actually nothing better. The same with running. I love some of my solo runs, but occasionally there'll be a 6 a.m. there'll be a group chat, 6 a.m. who's in. And the thought of, like, okay, everyone's up at 6 o'clock. I probably wouldn't be up unless I knew they were going to show up. So not only does it get you up, but also when you get up, you're all there, the energy, the excitement. There's nothing better. That's life. Like, what else is there than that? So that, yeah, miles shared are not only easier, they're just more enjoyable.
Yeah, I love that. George, to finish up, we have something called the final lap. So within the Pit Stop app, we have this thing called the Wheel of Life. And we believe that, much like what we've discussed, you know, it's not just about improving at one thing. You know, ideally, there's 6 aspects to it. There's health, mindset, leisure, relationships, career, and finance. And by working on those one at a time, but by working on those individually and trying to improve in those aspects, it leads to a more fulfilling and a better version of yourself, and therefore a better life. So I've got a quick fire question for each one of those. So kicking off first with health, what are 3 simple things that you do each day to improve your health?
My problem is, here across all pillars, I'm just going to keep banging presence unlocks it all, but I'll try not to do that. For my health, I guess creating some space each morning to practice what I'm talking about, which can easily get lost. My phone could get in the way, and it does. Noah wakes up early on Sunday, my days. So I can just get a little window of breath work, meditation, a mindful run. They're my 3 that if we can get one of those 3 in for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, then I usually feel like my day starts well from there.
Love that. Mindset. What is 1 piece of advice that you would give someone to improve their mental fitness?
I love that you heard me say the words "start where you play." I think start where you play. Wherever you enjoy sort of playing in life right now, bring a little bit of presence into that. And by presence, I just mean, just as you're doing the thing that you enjoy, the thing that you play at, just notice where your mind's at whilst you're doing that. And just bring your attention to the thing you're doing, or to your breath, or count your steps, or however you can just bring yourself in. So just start there.
I I've started doing that in the last couple of weeks. I live down in Cornwall. I live in Newquay, and I surf like between 5 and 7 days a week, basically. So I'm in the water most days. And I've started recently just trying to do a bit of breath work while I'm out there. And I'll be sat on the board and I close my eyes and I kind of put my hands together like this. And I just sit on my board and close my eyes and just like breathe through my nose really deeply. And, you know, kind of almost just like box breathing, you know, nothing complicated. And I just sit and do that. And no bullshit. Every time I do that, a wave comes to me. You know, I'll be sat in the lineup and I'll be like, am I in the wrong place to catch a wave? You know, there's loads of other people out there or anything. And I think it does. I'm not hugely kind of spiritual and all this stuff, but something happens where I sit there for a couple of minutes and just calm myself down and I try and be really present. And I'm like, I'm in the water and this is similar to what you said, you know, I'm counting the steps. Essentially, I'm doing the surfing equivalent of counting the steps.
Yeah.
Counting my steps. And every time I've done that, this perfect little A-frame just rolls in right towards me. I'm in the perfect spot and I get a great wave. It's so bizarre.
That's so cool.
It's so bizarre.
What I love about surfing is when you find that wave, you are in complete flow, presence. Like surfing is it when you're in it. Whereas running is the opposite. When you're running, there's so much space for thought.
Yes.
Whereas when you're on the wave, there's no space for thought. You've just got to be in it. But yeah. I guess before you catch the wave, there is room for...
Huge amount of room.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. I think the more you can almost get yourself there... And maybe it feels like the wave comes to you, but actually I think you're maybe just more in the water. You're more with the ocean, which is, I've got a friend who I've been working with and he's a brilliant golfer. And yeah, he says the same when he's there, he just like that feeling that he gets when he hits the ball, when he's fully there, it's like the best feeling in the world. And he described it as like catching a wave. So I think every sport has it's just working at getting your mind into that place where you are when you do hit the perfect wave. Why not practice that feeling before you actually catch it? I think that's brilliant, mate. I love that. Mm.
Yeah, it's just something I've been trying to do. Next up, leisure. What does taking time out just for you look like?
Probably walking the dog. I've got a little spaniel. She's great running partner, by the way. So like we'll get out on the trails in nature and just like she'll just run next to me. And yeah, that's a pretty cool feeling.
Yeah, I love that. Mm. Yeah. Relationships. What is one piece of advice that you'd give to maintain good relationships in life?
There was such a funny friend or someone I know quite well, Hector, who runs a company called Unplugged.
And I see him on LinkedIn. I love their stuff. It looks so cool.
And there was such a funny thread the other day. So they do like these cabins in nature where you can go to disconnect. And he wrote a LinkedIn post saying, I spend all day on my laptop telling people to get outdoors.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it was, I honestly have never like loved a LinkedIn post more. And everyone started basically responding with their like reality versus what they're trying to do. And mine was that I tell everyone to be more present. And my wife tells me that I'm the least present person she knows. Because she knows how kind of hyperactive I am and how much I have to work at this to be all the things I've just described. Like, I'm almost sharing all of this, not from a place of like, I know best. It's more like I need it more than anyone. And I'm working on it as hard as anyone because I need to. So relationships, I would say with Han, my wife, it's being as present as I can be, you know, for those moments. So yesterday I said to myself, like, I'm just going to be here all morning with her and that's it. And like block out that time of like, there's nothing else to do, just being with her. And that's probably if you asked her what's the best present I can get her for Christmas, it would just be like George without his phone for like an hour.
I love that. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people could probably realize their partners feel the same.
Yeah.
Career. What is one thing that you could attribute your career success to?
The first thing that comes into my mind is just being more myself. Being more me. Naval, I think it's one guy. He basically said, no one can compete with authenticity. Authenticity always wins. Scale authenticity. There's no competition when you're authentically you. It's impossible to compete with that. And again, I kind of read that a few years ago. I was like, what does that mean? And yeah, I think I've started to feel that more and more. It's almost like the more brave I am with being myself, it feels scary because I'm like, God, I'm showing people like more and more of me. I do feel like it. Yeah, it's hard to describe actually, but it just kind of the world sort of comes towards me the more I am me. Like I would never have thought I'd be doing Mara and like mindset and, you know, the work I'm doing, but it's kind of just been the more I've expressed myself, the more that's happened. So I think in career, in work, like if you can let more of yourself out, even if that's like 1%, like 2%, I just think that's probably what the world needs. It's probably what will take you to that next level in your career. And just trust that. Just trust that.
Love that. And then finally, finance. What is the best way to make your money work for you?
I think this is where I need your help. It would be, if you had that pie chart for me, this would be the one that like, I'm just like.
Really?
Yeah, I'm just, it's not, whether I'm avoiding it, maybe I did say this to myself the other day, maybe I'm just avoiding it and actually I need to step into it more, because I always say that it doesn't drive me. I always say like, it's the last thing I think about when I do anything, but it is in there because it's like it's a tool that allows me to do more of the things that I enjoy. So It's not by saying to myself, I don't care about it, it's not true. Like I do care about it, obviously, because it allows me to do things, but I think I could be more aware of it. I think I focus a lot on what makes me feel good, what do I enjoy, what do I want to do, what makes others feel good, how can I help others? Almost that all comes. And then my last thought is like, how can I fund that? And maybe if I just bring that up a little bit more, I think it could help me do more of those things faster or, you know, at scale. So yeah, good question. I don't think I've got the right answer to that one. I think I'm working on it.
I think that's an absolutely perfect answer, George. And I think it's one that will resonate with a lot of people, myself included. Mm. You know, I think, yeah, we're all, especially if we feel like we don't necessarily understand it as much as we should, we're all very quick to be like, yeah, no, it's not important to me. You know, because that's an easy thing to be like, it's almost like, it sounds bad, but it's an excuse. And I've done it plenty of times before. I'm like, yeah, no, money isn't important to me.
Well, I'm like, I'm not a runner. I'm not a runner. Running's not for me. I'm not
the biggest one to do that. Yeah.
And that was, yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. I've got all the excuses in the world because I tried running in COVID, did it for a few months, and I kind of strained all my inguinal muscles and, you know, whatever it was, all kind of like the inside of my legs and stuff. And then I just never really run again. They basically, I went to see the doctor. I'm quite tall. And they were basically just like, you're too big to run. And I was like, cool, there's my excuse.
Yeah.
There's my excuse.
Yeah, nice. Yep. Nice.
Yeah. George, I think you're awesome, mate. I think I love the positivity. I love everything you're about. Where can people go if they want to find out more about you and more about Mara as well?
Yeah, so my name's George Bettany. So on most socials, Instagram, LinkedIn, that sort of thing. And then, yeah, if you Google Mara Running or Mara Coaching, you'll find kind of the stuff that we do. We do a lot of stuff online. We're doing some physical events, retreats, and, yeah, we've got run clubs in different parts of the country as well. So, yeah, get involved.
Love that. Yeah, guys, thank you very much to George for being here. Thanks very much for all of you for listening. And yeah, we will see you all for the next one.
Thank you.